story. Luke chapter 15, and I'll begin in verse 17, and I'm going to read down to verse 24. I'll start reading, you just follow along, and I will read out loud. Luke 15, I'll begin in verse 17. And when he came to himself, he said, "How many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare? And I perish with hunger. I will arise and go to my father, and will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants." And he arose and came to his father, but when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And his son said unto him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven, and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son." But the father said to his servants, "Bring forth the best robe, and put it on him, put a ring on his hand, and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf, and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead, and is alive again. He was lost, and is found." And they began to be merry. Now, as we get into this lesson number 4, you'll see some things that relate back to number 3. And in many ways, what we're doing is we're going to look at the same things we looked at, but we're going to look at them now differently. So it's almost as if we looked at them this way, and now we're kind of taking a couple steps over and looking at the same thing again and getting some different perspective on these things. So you'll notice some similarity, but the application is going to be slightly different. So this lesson, lesson 3 and lesson 4, deals with what we call the prodigal perspective. Now, the first two lessons was a father perspective, the one who has sinned against, the one who has done wrong to. And we talked about in a broken relationship, sometimes you're the father. You're the one who's been done wrong. You were attacked. You were lied about. You were gossiped about. You were somehow, something was taken from you, or something happened and you were wronged. The prodigal perspective is different. It is, you did the wrong. You did the lying, you did the gossiping, you did the attacking, you whatever it was, you're the one who did it. That's the prodigal perspective. And there will be times that we are the prodigal, now this is what I'm about to say, that we are the prodigal that caused the problem. Now if you're sitting there and you're saying, "Not me, I've never caused a problem," can I tell you? That's the problem. That we never think we're wrong. And so there are times we are the prodigal. We are the one who's caused the division. Now, even when you are the father and you've been done wrong, in part, you're still going to be the prodigal. Because you say, "But no. They did X." Okay, they did X. But listen, only God is guiltless and blameless and sinless. Everyone else fails. So you may not be the prodigal, but there was some prodigal stuff going on even on your side of the equation. And so we have to understand. So these principles apply to all of us. If we were done wrong to, there's still a certain prodigal aspect to that issue. And if we were the one who did wrong, well, there's definitely the prodigal aspect. So this means that we have to apply all of these lessons in the first part, the second part, the third part, and now in the fourth lesson. We have to apply all of these regardless of which side of that equation we may be on. And really, if you think about reconciling broken relationships, restoring broken relationships, there's always a need for grace and humility. We're not going to fix relationships walking into it with our feathers fluffing and, "I didn't do anything wrong. It's all your fault." Okay, I'm going to tell you, you're not going to fix the problem. It takes grace and humility. And regardless of who did what, that's required. If you're sincerely looking for restored relationships, that's necessary. So let's get into it. I gave you three lessons last week. I'm going to give you three more lessons this week. I'm not going to ask you for lessons from last week. I learned my lesson about asking for lessons. Don't ask, because you didn't tell. So here we go. Number one, go with me to chapter 15. Now look with me at verse number 12. So we'll go back a little bit into this account and look at verse 12. And the younger of them said to his father, and the younger is the one that is referred to as the prodigal. And the younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me." And he divided to them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey to far country. Now let's just stop for a moment. At that point in time, he's gone. He took what his inheritance was, and he's headed out. What happens next is after he gets there. But I don't want to talk about what happened next. I want to talk about him leaving. There's nothing that tells us in this story. Now, it could be, and most likely his heart wasn't right, because that's what it seems to be. But as far as his actions were, there's nothing really jumps out of you that is wrong. Maybe foolish, but not necessarily sinful as in wrong. He simply said, I want my inheritance now. And maybe who knows what he said. Maybe he said, I'm going to go there and I'm going to start Facebook. I'm going to start Amazon. I'm going to start some type of business. I'm going to be rich and famous. Who knows what his intention was? But the problem is, his action was still wrong. So that brings us to an important understanding about broken relationships. And the first lesson we're going to look at is, number one, is this. Understand that your intentions do not justify your actions. If you're the prodigal, if you're the one that they're mad at because what you did, you cannot simply claim, but I meant well, I meant good, but what did you do? Your intentions does not justify the actions. We have to understand it, because a lot of times that's why their relationship isn't healed, because we sit there and say, well, but I meant good. But you got to deal with what you did, not just what you meant to do. If you did, now watch this statement. This is so deep. Ready? This is a deep statement. Did I tell you that I went to 8 years of Bible college? It takes 8 years of Bible college to get this statement. Ready? If you did something to hurt someone, then you did something to hurt someone. Wow, that is deep. That is deep, isn't it? But it's true. If you did something, you did something. And you have to own up. So, but I didn't mean it to hurt them. I didn't mean it to turn out like that. That wasn't my intention. But that was your action. And you have to deal with your action. Sometimes, okay, this idea you did something to hurt someone and therefore they're hurt, sometimes that is unavoidable if you're doing right. I understand that. Doesn't mean that we're callous and careless. If I do right, and my doing right causes an offense, okay, let's say I do right and I offended Chris in my doing of right. I'm not happy he's offended. Maybe it's unavoidable because my other choice is to do wrong and I don't want to do wrong, so I'm going to do right. But it doesn't mean I'm okay that he's offended. I still want to say, okay, is there some way we can deal with this? I don't want to compromise. I don't want to do wrong, but can we deal with the brokenness? Can we somehow maybe restore things? And so sometimes it's unavoidable. But other times, it's the unintended consequence from our action, because we never thought, never considered what could happen. I'm just got to do what I do. But what you did, you hurt them unnecessarily, and you got to own up to it. Now, we think about this. Last week, when we talked about something similar to this, we talked about people doing things in pride and selfishness, and you have to deal with that aspect. Now, this lesson is different than that. We're talking about someone who maybe did something, not selfishly necessarily, and maybe that was there, but that really wasn't what you were thinking. You weren't thinking you were being proud. You weren't thinking you were being selfish. You did something without considering the effect on others, but you now have to deal with the effect. You can't simply say, I don't have to deal with it because I meant good. No, your intention does not justify the action. You have to deal with what happened. If a relationship has been broken by our actions, then we need to seek reconciliation, even if those actions came from good intentions. We don't get a pass from wrong actions by claiming good intentions. We are responsible for our actions, regardless of any intentions we had in doing. Are you getting the point? Intentions does not justify what you did. Even if what you did was right, you still have to say, okay, but I hurt someone and I need to deal with it. I'm not, in no way am I implying compromise. I am implying, let's be gracious and understand that we hurt them. I'll give you two examples. One I have down, but one I just remembered. Here's a lesson I had to learn. You may not know this about me, but at one time I was a manager at Long John Silver's. Did I ever tell you that? It was a highlight of my life because you got free pecan pie. It was like Nirvana, man. It was great. So, when I became a manager, there was another girl who was there. Her name was Cindy. Now, me and Cindy got hired at the same time. Now, neither one of us got hired to be managers. She was just the cashier person working out in the dining room. And let me just, okay, time out. Long John Silver's that we had is not like the Long John Silver's down here. Okay, that one is like comparing our Long John Silver's to that Long John Silver's is like comparing a Mercedes to a Yugo or something, or a scooter. I mean, that Long John's is a disgrace. They should just burn it down. It is a disgrace to the name Long John Silver's. Okay, so don't judge me by them. That's what I'm saying. Okay, so anyways. So I got hired. I was a cook. She got hired. She was the cashier in register. Over a period of time, we both got hired basically the same week. It was a brand new restaurant. We both got hired. We were like the first hires. And through a process of time, over not quite a year, she didn't really want to get promoted. But I got promoted, and eventually I became her boss. You know what happens when you're the person who got hired at the same time your boss got hired, but now all of a sudden he's your boss? You don't really necessarily enjoy that, do you? You don't like, well, who are you? You're no different than me. The problem with Cindy was a great person in what she did, but she was so stoic. She never smiled. Hello, can I have your order? Okay, thank you. And now she'd get her order perfect, but she never smiled. You walk in, you almost say like, are you okay? Are you alive? Are you like a zombie? What's wrong with you? And so she was always told, every manager, Cindy, won't you smile? Won't you be nice? Be polite. Be enthusiastic. Come alive. Quit being dead. She never changed. So now I'm the manager. Now it's my job to tell her this. And so I told her this. Anyone want to guess how it went? Yeah, not that bad. And worse than that, it was really when I first became a manager. I'm going to fix Cindy. It didn't go well. It went so bad in so many ways. And here's her response to me. I said what I had to say, and here's her response to me. Here's her response. Now, that's the whole day. The next day, things changed. It was more like this. After several days, takes me a while, I said, you know, I think I offended her. So I had to make things right. So I went. During my time that I had a break, I went. There's a flower shop down the road. I went and got her some flowers. I pulled her aside. I said, Cindy, because, you know, I'd known her for a while. And so we'd worked together a lot of times. I said, Cindy, I'm sorry. What I told you is what I should have told you, because that's what is required of me as a manager. But the way I told you, and maybe my attitude about telling you, really wasn't very nice. Please forgive me. And you could see it in her face this much. She went, about like that. One quick smile. Now, did she change her behavior? No. She was still the unsmiling zombie cashier. But I had to deal with my action. My intention was good. Hey, I'm the boss. This is what I'm supposed to do. But my action wasn't right. I didn't handle it right. I was a lot more arrogant and cocky than I should have been. And I had to deal with it. Good intention, bad action. I'll give you another example. If you think about intention versus action, think about discharging a firearm. When you discharge a firearm, you're responsible for whatever happens, whatever that bullet does after it leaves your gun. If you're the one to fire that gun, it is completely your responsibility, no matter what happens. Anyone ever watch It's a Wonderful Life? You ever watch George Bailey running away? I think, is it Bert the Cop? And Bert is going, pow, 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 which is funny because you're like slinging bullets at him. The street is full of people. And here goes George, and he, I don't know how many, he shoots three or four or whatever, 21 times, on that six shot, he just keeps shooting at him. He never hits George. But you know, I know it's a movie, but in real life, those bullets are going somewhere, are they not? In real life, what you'd see is six people laying on the ground dead, and George keep running. Now, you're responsible. When those bullets leave your gun, you're responsible, and when those words leave your mouth, you're responsible. And we have to take responsibility for the things that we do. We just can't simply say, I meant to shoot George, yeah, but you shot six old ladies laying on the road, and now you got to deal with it. So we have to understand our intentions do not justify our actions. That's the first thing we have to learn. There's a second thing. Go back with me to chapter 15. Look with me at verse 20. And he arose and came to his father, but when he was a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And his son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and are no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, bring forth the best robe, and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand, and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf, and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. You know why it works? Because one is confessing the fault, and one is offering the forgiveness. Unfortunately, that doesn't always work that way. So number two is this. You cannot demand forgiveness, or you cannot demand to be forgiven. The prodigal understood that even after he confessed his sin, he could not demand that his father forgive him and restore the relationship. How do I know that? Because he said in verse 18, I arise unto my father and saying to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. Interesting enough, when he goes down and starts speaking to his father, in verse 21, the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said, in other words, even before he could finish that statement, make me as one of thy hired servants, his father jumps right in. But the son was willing to confess and accept the fact that his father may not forgive him. He's coming back to his father. He's wasted his father's inheritance. He's understanding the aspect of, I need to confess my fault, but that doesn't mean my father is going to forgive that fault. But does that change the requirement of confessing the fault? No. And so you have to understand that we may not be forgiven. You can't demand to be forgiven. If you're the one who's done wrong, you can't go to them and say, but you got to forgive me. That's not what you can control. You're talking about, I need to deal with my actions. How they respond is on them. So even though our hope may be full reconciliation and restoration of a broken relationship, it may not turn out that way. Now many, and maybe even most, will respond well to a contrite and humble confession. Most people, I think, would. They would see that you're sincere, they would see that you're being humble, and they would respond in a positive way. But even in those situations, it still may not be what you wanted or expected. And sometimes this is what happens why relationships aren't restored, because they're not responding the way you wanted them to respond. You cannot control their response. You cannot go into a situation and say, this is going to be restored when you respond this way. Can you see why that would be a problem? Especially if you're the prodigal. You have to go and say, I'm wrong, please forgive me. And then you leave it on the table for them and how they deal with it. You cannot demand to be forgiven. You want to be forgiven. That's kind of what you're trying to do. You're trying to reconcile, restore. You want to be forgiven. But you can't make it a demand to be forgiven. You can't now control. They're a part of it. They have to make that decision for themselves. Now, truly, for there to be a healing of a broken relationship, what we see here is what needs to happen. There must be both confession of fault and the granting of forgiveness. Both has to happen for the restoration. Which, by the way, is what happened at salvation. God didn't save you until you admitted the fact that you were a sinner who needed to be saved. Jesus said, I came to seek and to save that which was lost. And if you're not lost, you cannot be found. So you had to come to Christ admitting your side of it. My confession, I'm a sinner, I'm lost, I need to be saved. And then the Lord granted full forgiveness. Aren't you glad for that? Now that restores a relationship. That is what we want even in our human relationships. But you only have one side that you have any control over. If you're the one who's done the wrong, all you can do is to confess it. If you're the one who's been done wrong to, all you can do is offer forgiveness. You can't make them fess up. You can't say, no, I want you to admit to all of these things. Because maybe they won't admit to all of them. And so, what I'm telling you, the perfect solution is when everyone confesses and everyone forgives, but ultimately we have to concern ourselves with our side of the equation. Both must happen for complete restoration, but each must happen independent of the other. So the prodigal decided to confess regardless of his father's reaction. Now, interesting, the father had prepared his forgiveness. How do I know that? He said, hey, get the ring, get the shoes, get the coat, and kill the fatted calf. Fatted calf. He had everything set up, ready to go. So the father had prepared his forgiveness before the prodigal ever showed up. So if, now watch what I'm going to say. If your confession, you're looking for restoration. You're the prodigal, you did something wrong, and now you're going to go and try to confess and say, okay, I'm wrong, this is what I did. Okay, you're me, and you're going to sending saying, I was wrong, and please forgive me. Okay, if your confession hinges on their forgiveness, you will become angry when their forgiveness isn't what you expected. If you're putting some type of criteria on them, I'm going to do this, and here's what they must do, you're going to be disappointed because you're trying to control both sides, and you can't do that. If your forgiveness hinges on their confession, I'm going to forgive them, but I expect them to admit everything about it. None of this double talk, everything. I want them to confess clearly everything. Now, if your forgiveness hinges on their confession, you probably become bitter when their confession isn't what you expected. Because sometimes people confess to being wrong, but maybe they don't think that they're as wrong as you think they're wrong. Maybe they don't think they're as wrong as many things as you think they're wrong. They say, yeah, I'm wrong, but I really wasn't that wrong or about all those things. And so if your only way you're going to get forgiveness is if they agree, then you probably are going to have some issues. So let's give you one more statement and move to the third. For there to be healing of a broken relationship, there must be both confession of fault and the granting of forgiveness. But both must happen for complete restoration. But each must happen independent of the other. I said a lot of things before I pushed buttons. I was on a roll, sorry. And here's the last statement. Restoration requires both confession and forgiveness, but you can only focus on the one you can do. Both are necessary, yes. I agree, both has to be there. But you can't play both sides. You have to deal with what you can deal with. If someone has wronged you, you can say, you know, man, if I'm happy to forgive them. I'm wanting to forgive them. I don't want to have this bitterness. I don't want to have any grudges. I want to forgive them. But if they're sitting there saying, well, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. Well, it can be kind of hard to forgive them because they don't think they need forgiven. And if I've done someone wrong, I want to be forgiven. I want to go to them and say, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. I don't want to live my life knowing this guilt that I've done this to you. But if they say like, oh, I'll never forgive you for what you did. Well, I can't control that. But I can, as humbly and as with much grace as I can confess what I did wrong and ask for them to forgive me. So both are necessary for the complete restoration, but you can only focus on the one side that you can do. Now let me give you the third aspect of this. We talked last week about the older brother, and we said, don't get so caught up in one broken relationship that you ignore all the other relationships in your life. And you become consumed with this, and now next thing you know, you've got some other issues going on. Now, we're going to go back to that, but we're going to talk about it in a slightly different way. So go with me back to chapter 15. Look with me in verse 28. And he was angry and would not, this is the older brother, the older son slash older brother, and he was angry and would not go in, and therefore came his father out and entreated him, and he answering said to his father, lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I any time thy commandment. And yet thou never gavest me a kid that I may make merry with my friends. Sounds like kind of a spoiled person, doesn't he? But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast, and notice he has to put that in there, doesn't he? Devour thy living with harlots. Let's add a little salt to the wound there. Thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. And he said unto him, son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, and this, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again and was lost and is found. So here's the third lesson about this idea about restoring, repairing broken relationships. Number three is this. There will be fallout from the broken relationship. This is why we should do everything we can to avoid broken relationships. It's like when you're a kid and you broke that thing of your mom's and she was gone and you got the glue out and you glued it all together and you put it back on the shelf and you're like, oh man, we're going to get away with this. And as soon as your mom walked in, she said, who broke because she could tell it wasn't put together exactly right. And so when there are broken relationships, they always don't go back together perfectly. And not only that, they tend to create other issues in other relationships. Often a broken relationship with one person can cause hurt in other relationships. I'll give you an example of what I mean by that. A breakdown in a marital relationship almost always, and the word almost probably shouldn't even be there, causes hurt in the relationship with the children. You can't have mom and dad splitting, fussing, doing whatever, and not expect the kids not to receive damage from it. It overflows in other relationships. Even this, think about it this way, a breakdown in a sibling relationship, again, causes hurt in the relationship with the other siblings. If there are multiple siblings and two of them are fussing, what do the siblings want? They want the other siblings to agree with them. And if they don't, that creates more problems. But you know what sister did to me? No, what did sister do? She did that. Well, I'm against sister too. And now you have division in the family because of these two are fighting. Now they're picking up sides. And that's never a good thing. The same is true in friendships. Same is true even in church relationships. You know, one person over here, James, gets mad at Mike. And now Cole has to decide, do I go with James or do I go with Mike? And Kelly's like, well, who do I go with, James or go with Mike? And then all of a sudden you have division, unnecessary division, because two people are fussing, and a lot of times fussing over things they shouldn't be fussing over. So James and Mike, let's cut it out there. And so you have to understand that there's going to be fallouts. So let me picture it this way with me. Ready? Our actions are like stones thrown into the water. There is the initial splash, that's the breakdown, the split, which is most noticeable. But then there are the ripples which spread out and affect others. So everyone sees the first boom, the blow up. Man, look at them fussing. But then there's going to be ripples that occur that other people are going to now start being bothered by. And it's going to start affecting them. We have to understand this, and, well, I don't want to get ahead of my statement here. I'll give it to you right now. We are responsible. I want you to think about this statement very carefully. We are responsible for both the splash and the ripples. If you're fussing with someone, it's causing other issues with other people, you also now have other things to deal with. Because if you weren't fussing, those other issues may not be there. So we can't simply say, well, I didn't say anything to them. Yeah, but because you said something to this other person, that caused problems with them, unnecessarily. This is why, as much as lieth in you, live peacefully with all men. Don't fuss with people, because other people are going to be hurt by it. So we're responsible for both the splash and the ripples if we are the one who threw the stone. Okay, we can't simply say, no, the splash mine, the ripples aren't. No, the ripples wouldn't be there if the splash wasn't there. Additionally, now watch this. Okay, let me add a little bit of stress to your reconciliation process. Additionally, we have to consider both the splash and the ripples as we seek reconciliation. So let's say it's me. I'll go back to me. So me and Brother Choma has an issue. Okay? And now we're fussing. And I don't know this, but Mike has found out about it. Just like he was fussing with James. Now he's found out about this, and now he's mad at me because I'm fussing with Kelly. And he said, you know, why would you fuss with him? He's such a nice guy. Why would you fuss with him? Now, I don't know this. All I know is me and him have an issue. But if I'm going to restore this relationship, that doesn't mean I'm free from that issue as well. Because if I wasn't fussing with him, it may never cause an issue with him. So I got to only deal with this. Then I got to say, Mike, I know you knew me and Kelly were fussing, and I've gone to Kelly. We have hammered things out. We seem to be okay, and I'm sorry that it impacted you. I'm sorry it affected you. Please forgive both of us. Please forgive me for what I did. I can't, you know, I'm not blaming Kelly for anything, but I'm sorry for what I did. Please forgive me. I hope that we can still be friends. Why am I doing that? Because that's the ripple. That's the splash. I'm responsible for both. Now, I'm saying this because if we would understand that, I think we'd be much better at fixing our relationships. We don't want to do stuff like that. We want to say, well, it's your problem. You deal with it. And we can't figure out why we have a country that everyone seems to hate everyone over all kinds of stupid stuff. We have to understand that we are responsible and God holds us responsible, and relationships are important, and we need to do the hard work of restoration and reconciliation. It is wise for both parties involved in the initial breakdown to consider those who might have been hurt by that breakdown. I just kind of talked about that. Regardless if you are the father or the prodigal, you may need to deal with those ripples. So it isn't, now watch what I'm about to say next. It isn't who is at fault, but who cares enough to take responsibility. Let me show you what I mean. Go back to chapter 15, look at verse 31. And he said unto him, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. So the father is talking to the older son. But the older son really is impacted by the younger son, his younger brother, by his younger brother's action. What's interesting is the younger brother seems not to be involved in this. The younger brother caused a problem. The younger brother is, hey, I got a ring, got shoes, got a robe. Hey, I mean some food. It's not enough to share with the pigs. Great. And the father is dealing with the ripples. Was it the father's fault? Not really, but he's taking responsibility. That is mature Christianity. We take responsibility because we understand this is what the Lord wants. He wants us to be peacemakers. In fact, there's a verse in the Bible about that, isn't it? Blessed are the peacemakers. Now let's talk about some conclusion. The relationships that we have with people are some of God's greatest blessings. Our moms, our dads, our spouses, our children, even friends. Some of the greatest blessings that God gives us are these relationships. Now, every person has need of these relationships, even if the rest of your life is perfect. If you have a perfect job, perfect house, perfect car, perfect gun, perfect whatever, perfect TV, perfect dog, perfect, I was going to say cat, but I kid myself. Anyways, so if all your life was perfect, listen to what I'm going to say. If all your life was perfect, you still need relationships. You can't say, well, I don't need anyone. I got the world by the tail. I don't need anyone. Ask Adam. He lived in the Garden of Eden in paradise. And God said, no, he needs a helpmeet. He needs someone. So I'm telling you, we need relationships, and relationships are part of God's blessings. Therefore, we should strive to do our best to protect these relationships from harm. We're not careless, we're not callous, we're not flippant, complacent. We want these relationships. We want to protect these relationships. And if there are relationships that are damaged, to pursue reconciliation and restoration as much as possible. Because we understand the importance of these relationships. We're not just whatever. No, we want to fix them as much as possible. With the Lord's help, obviously. All right. Well, that is lesson 4. And Lord willing, we'll have 5 here in a couple weeks. And then 6 to follow. We'll see what happens. 12, who knows? We'll see what happens. I appreciate being with us tonight. Do be praying for the Ritzes in the, I would imagine, sometime this evening, if not already, birth of their new baby. And then praying for Ellison's and these other prayer requests we mentioned. All right, well, let's have a closing word of prayer and we'll be dismissed. Father, we are thankful for the blessings you give us, especially these relationship blessings. Many, I'm sure, here, Lord,